From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Avoiding junk status can only be done if the governor reassures the credit rating agencies that junk status is unnecessary and unwarranted. The governor must travel to New York, speak directly with the three rating agencies, and convince them that he embraces the decisions of the legislature and will implement the budget agreement.
Big political news from Springfield tonight. Governor Rauner shakes up his staff.
It's the first fallout from Governor Bruce Rauner's big loss on the Illinois income tax hike vote.
The governor has ousted his chief of staff, Rich Goldberg, replacing him with Christina Rasmussen.
Former president of the highly conservative Illinois Policy Institute.
It signals a more conservative approach as he begins his reelection campaign.
When he gets 90% of what he wants on education reform, based on a commission that he's put together, and then says, I'm going to veto it, it doesn't matter what the staff changes are. That is a outlook and a perspective that cannot lead to progress.
Governor Bruce Rauner didn't get what he wanted from the state legislature, so he's going to go a different way with a new staff. There's been a shakeup in the governor's office, and there is more reaction to the state budget as well. We're going to talk about all that on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and joining me in studio today, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House reporter. Also, Chris Mooney, director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. And joining us by phone today, Greg Hines of Crane Chicago Business. He's the political writer there. And Greg, good to have you on once again.
Always a pleasure.
Greg, let's start with you. Want to talk about those changes in the governor's office, chief of staff, director of communications, others being replaced. What is happening there?
Well, we kind of wondered after last week, after the overwrites, what Rauner would do, whether he would kind of rest on his laurels and just run against the evil Democrats and their tax increase, but essentially try to get along until election time, or whether he'd double down and go back to the mats. Well, we now know the answer. He's doubling down. He's bringing in a whole series of folks, mostly from the Policy Institute, who frankly had considered Bruce Rauner to be a liberal sympathizer. It was only 3-4 weeks ago that the governor's new chief of staff, Ms. Rasmussen, was publicly criticizing him for playing footsie with the Democrats on a possible tax increase. Well, those are the guys who are now going to control the governor's press operation, his chief of staff operation, other parts of the government. This governor was not inclined to compromise most of the time. Well, now he's in more of an echo chamber than ever. And it means we're going to have very interesting times to come. The budget wars are not over, folks.
The Illinois Policy Institute. Brian, what is that organization, and why has it got people so interested here in these changes?
Yeah, it's a group that I've called them an advocacy organization in my reporting. They style themselves a think tank, but they do a number of things. They have a wing that sues people and governments on behalf of legislation they want to see. They've filed the lawsuit that's challenging the union's so-called fair share fees, that where state workers, even if you don't join the labor union, you have to pay fees. They have a wing that does campaign-type work, a true political action committee. And then they have this wing that publishes a lot of op-eds, and they have a news service that they send free news stories that are picked up in a lot of smaller, more mid-sized and smaller newspapers across the state. They recently bought a radio network within the last year or two. And, you know, the policies they advocate are pretty conservative. I'm thinking back over the years, there was an op-ed at one point that advocated for the governor to fire every state worker and rehire them so that they could be given lower retirement benefits. This is definitely a pretty far towards the right end of the political spectrum. And they, I should also add, their budget proposal this year it wasn't widely adopted, or picked up by politicians, but it suggested that you could balance the budget with deep, deep, deep cuts and no tax increases. Very little buy-in to that concept, though, from legislators on both sides of the aisle.
And Chris Mooney?
Yeah, the sort of ideological perspective of this group, and we call them conservative, very conservative. I think there's no doubt that that's true, and they would embrace that. But they're not, the conservative movement in this country really has a sort of two wings, and one of them is sort of driven by the Christian right, very focused on moral issues, you know, abortion in particular, sort of the thing they've been running with for quite a few years. And then you've got this sort of libertarian arm, you know, the sort of Rand Paul followers of Ayn Rand, for example, and who are really not so much concerned with the moral issues. They're concerned with the economic issues. And in fact, I mean, some of the extreme writers in this world think of the economic issues as moral issues, but not in the same way that sort of people on the far left would think of economic issues as moral issues. They're thinking that, you know, that free enterprise is, you know, it's the goal of all, that liberty is a word you hear them talking about. They want freedom. They want to govern off their back. They want to, you know, deconstruct the administrative state, as Steve Bannon talked about. And the Illinois Policy Institute, my read on, you know, what they have, you know, their message is put out, it falls into that more of that libertarian camp. And, you know, the reason we're talking about this right now, usually this is the most inside of baseball. Nobody cares who's on the governor's staff except for, you know, people actually having to work with them. But, you know, what this demonstrates is that the governor is, you know, he's all in on that side. I mean, I think we've known that he is, you know, a strong free market guy all along. But now suddenly he's bringing these people in. They bring nothing to the table other than ideological purity. I mean, they don't have any experience in government for the most part. They don't have a lot of experience in campaigns. They don't have connections, working connections, really, with the general mass of people working in and around state government. So that's was his choice.
Greg,
yeah,
what?
I think those are some really good points. And let me just add one other one to the list before we go on. What's really the core of all this is, how do you bring change to a state that clearly needs some change? I think Democrats and Republicans on both sides of the aisle agree that the state's economy isn't what it should be. We need to make some changes. But these kinds of changes, the kind of changes that the Policy Institute and now the governor's new staff want, aren't changes as much as a revolution. They're dramatic, incredible, over the top changes. I don't consider that conservative. Conservatives take their time, and they take what they can get, and they digest, and then they do a little bit more. This is really radical. That's a word that Rasmussen had used.
Well, Greg, let me ask you this: when it comes to Bruce Rauner, because I would say he's a smart fellow. He knows what he wants. Why does he need the Policy Institute in there to tell him what he wants? Did his other staff members just not do a good enough job?
You know, that's a really good question, and I can't quite get into the governor's head. I can tell you that it is a pretty well-known secret around the Capitol that the governor was very unhappy with his press staff. He blamed them for the bad message, much in a way kind of like Donald Trump's blaming his press people. They've all been now replaced, with one exception who's still there, and I'm not sure how long she's going to be there. If she has a resume, I'd get it out if I were her. He clearly has chosen not to try to work this out in any way at this point and take it to the voters in 2018. He's going to go down and fight like heck and get every last thing. And the question is how much China and collateral damages are going to be in the meantime. The big piece of the budget that really wasn't done was school funding. The Democrats included some money in the budget, but they also passed a remap of the school funding formula that he's threatened to veto. Well, if he does that, the schools may not open, or if they do open, they may not stay open long, like the summer or in the fall. And now you have this new cast of characters who are telling the governor, don't compromise, stick to your guns. You know, if there's damage, so what? We have to have our revolution here.
I think this does fit in to the general political philosophy that we've seen from the Rauner camp for a few years now, where they think the major divide at least among their base, is insider versus outsider, right? And they talk about I've talked to some strategists who say that that's what President Trump rode to Washington, and Governor Rauner has tried to do the same thing here, that it's not really Democrats and Republicans or conservatives and liberals, that what animates a lot of voters these days is this idea of insider versus outsider. And we've already seen that in the messaging this week. Well, the Policy Institute, it's true, they are outsiders in Springfield. Even they have ideas that have been put into bill form, but it's not like they are particularly influential in terms of getting their legislative agendas drafted into law. Their ideas have been outsider ideas. And so it seems that the governor is, as we said, doubling down on this strategy that he is going to run against not just Speaker Madigan and the politicians he controls, but even the Republicans in Springfield, perhaps. And we saw that in his messaging right after he vetoed the budget before he had been overridden in the House. He was asked a question about, what do you think about, you're saying it's Speaker Madigan's tax hike, but there were 16 legislative Republicans who helped vote for it and get it into law. And he said, the politicians on both sides have been doing the wrong thing for too long. So this plays into his messaging, whether that, Donald Trump lost Illinois by a pretty wide margin. So whether that works in a general election context here is an open question.
Chris, let me ask you, because Greg mentioned too about he'll have people who will be saying, stick to your guns. What's wrong with that? You're going into really what is a battle here. You want people on the same page as you, I would guess. So if he feels these people are on the same page, is that a bad thing for the governor?
Well, you certainly want your staff to be on your side. They need to be extensions, staff as opposed to even, agency directors. Staff are really just direct extensions of the governor's eyes, ears, and hands and feet. I mean, they are supposed to represent, and they have to have, clear loyalty. That's their one and only job, is to represent the principal. And I don't think there's anyone that would argue that the former staff was anything but that. I mean, they were super loyal. They were, they were tough. There was complaints about that they were all campaign staff and they weren't governing staff and they didn't know how to govern, but they knew how to campaign. There was that. But no, so the whole thing, it has the appearance of panic to me. And I don't really know what's going on. Again, Greg, I have no idea what's going on in Bruce Rauner's head. But, he has the veto override, and he had a choice at that moment. And he could either say, he had many choices, but two that he could say, well, look, they overrode my veto. They causing a tax increase. I'm going to drive that home. I'm going to take that to the bank in commercials that they and all the while I'm using the money of the tax increase to shore up government, to fix things, to do all the things that governors normally do to make themselves popular among the state. So he could have really and I think there was a lot of comment on this in the media about how this looked like it was probably a win. I mean, the override was probably a win for Rauner. But he interpreted it a different way and sort of immediately throws everybody out, gets in the new group, goes to the mattresses, doesn't go to find people that can help him cooperate and to work with others in the group, goes and really isolates himself even within the Republican Party. I think it's pretty clear that the sort of IPI libertarian wing of the Republican Party is not the mainstream of the Republican Party by any stretch of the imagination, especially in the state of Illinois.
I do want to move on to some other topics, but before we do, Greg, I'll kind of give you the last chance on this, but just what Chris was talking about, maybe the more moderate wing of the Republican Party, any idea how they're viewing these changes?
Oh, I don't think they're happy at all. I talked to probably a dozen high-ranking Republicans in the last few days, all of them would fit what Bruce Rauner, I guess, would call insiders, and they're just aghast. One head of a major group, for instance, says that if Rauner keeps doing this, his chances of winning a new term have gone from pretty good a week ago to zero. This person's concluding comment was, well, there's only another 16 months left in his term. I guess he can't do too much damage. If the Democrats can come up with someone who can tap into that and without going too far to the ideological extreme in their own primary, that there's the potential here for a lot of folks who you would think would go with a Republican to flip sides. But we'll see.
Brian, the last couple of years have brought with it, I guess, made the credit rating agencies household names in the state of Illinois. We have reported on what they think about Illinois' finances. In the wake of the budget being approved, we've now heard from a couple of different agencies, almost a little bit, I don't want to say mixed messages, but it seemed that way, at least what I read. Give us a sort of an update on what's going on.
Yeah, well, so over the 4th of July holiday weekend, go back about a week and a half here, when almost 2 weeks now, when the budget deal was finally coming together on the House side, it had passed one chamber. We heard from two of the credit rating agencies, S&P and Fitch, that said, okay, we're going to take a pause, even though we had threatened junk bond status at the end of the day on June 30th, the end of the fiscal year, if you guys didn't have your acts together. We're going to take a pause. Let's see how this plays out. Moody's was much more pessimistic at that point, saying that, you know, we assume this deal is going to go through, but even then, probably not good enough, doesn't deal with a backlog of bills, which is $15 billion at this point, potentially could get bigger. And it certainly does nothing to address the $130+ billion in unfunded pension liabilities. Since the budget has been fully enacted, we saw S&P kind of put the brakes on, a slightly more permanent basis, or at least for the near term, on their junk threat. But we're still waiting on what Moody's is going to do, and they were the big pessimists. So Democrats went out of their way to point out all the things that they had in their budget package that they say will begin addressing this backlog of bills. But there are real questions, and I'm sure if Governor Rauner was not an object, if the Democrats had super majorities, vast majorities, they would have probably passed a bigger tax increase and done a different budget than they did. But they ended up compromising and getting what they could at this point.
Now, of course, they passed this budget. I mean, Greg, I'll ask you, is the pressure off to some extent? Things may not be perfect in the state of Illinois. There may still be these financial problems, but are we, as far as lawmakers are concerned, are they going to rush back and try to do more things just to appease these credit agencies, or are they basically saying they've done enough for now?
They should try to do some things to appease the credit agencies and Governor Rauner, to be honest. One of the points that Moody's makes, Moody's has been the conservative one, the bad boy of the agencies consistently. They've been the first to downgrade. That happened up in Chicago too. But one of their concerns is expressed in their statement was that, hey, if the governor and the legislature are still fighting all the time implementing this budget and getting any good out of it is going to be really difficult, and it's a valid point. Now, John Cullerton and Mike Madigan, the president of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, both keep saying that they're willing to come back and talk to the governor more about some of his structural changes, some form of local property tax freeze, further improvements in workers' compensation, and so forth. That would help because the problems are still there. In particular, they haven't done anything at all about the pension monster, which continues to eat up the state budget. All that unfunded liability is still there. We've done some things dealing with new employees, but anything that might reduce the backlog for the old employees, the folks who are already there, hasn't occurred. And that's going to continue to hang like a big black cloud over the state and in the opinion of all the ratings agencies. They need to do more. To do that, though, people have to get along and try to work together, and that hasn't happened.
Yes, and that's how these things – I mean, these are all hard things, right? I mean, the reason we're having these difficulties is that it's a hard problem, and hard problems are hard to solve. And the way they can be most productively solved is not by some sort of unilateral approach by some individual or individual party, but through cooperation from both parties. I mean, we've talked about that on this show a million times, and you hear, the bemoaning the lack of compromise and working together. But it really is, in a practical sense, a necessary thing, because when you're doing these hard things, both parties need political cover. So they're not going to get out in front, especially in the state of Illinois. You might see that some places, but you're not going to see that sort of profiles in courage very often in Illinois, and mainly because they're trying to represent their constituents and they're trying to do a good job with that. So now you've got the governor sort of veering off to the right, and that doesn't bode well for compromise. But I think the first thing that's going to happen, as was alluded to before, has to do with school funding. And that's going to be the next big crisis. And You know, there was a in the budget there's language that says yes, there's money for the schools, but it can only be distributed based on so-called evidence-based program for distribution of this money, and that refers to a bill that's already passed the legislature, hasn't been given to the governor yet because they're kind of holding it back, trying to work it out with them, or hoping that things can, you know, be worked out. But once they do send it to him, you know, the governor's got a choice. Is he going to, you know, veto that thing or veto parts of it you know, stand for principle, or is he going to let schools open up in August? Now, his kids are grown. I know his daughter just graduated from college out in New Hampshire. I noticed that there's another college student fleeing the state, I guess, for a different place to go to school. You know, lots of people do have kids in school, and you know, one of the few things, there's a couple of things that really are going to get a governor in trouble really quickly, like in the matter of minutes. And one of them is a prison riot, and the other one is not having the schools open.
Well, we did see some more details coming out of the budget. People having a chance to look through this a little bit more. Greg, you wrote about one area regarding local governments might be a bit of a surprise for some communities out there when it comes to sales tax revenue.
Yeah, one of the things the Democrats did, and they frankly borrowed an idea from the governor and from the Illinois Policy Institute, was impose a 2% handling fee on locally imposed sales taxes, be it your city, your county board, the Regional Transportation Authority up here. They're now going to take 2% right off the top. That's going to go into the Treasury to help pay for stuff. That's about $60 million a year. The Municipal League didn't like it at all. They say, hey, we need our money. Don't take it away. But it was part of the sticking and putting together of all kinds of stuff that they use to balance the budget. It's there.
Now, Brian, when you hear things like that in the budget, I mean, those people who voted for it, of course, many of them probably didn't know that was in there or maybe not had a chance to really understand what it meant, hear from their constituents. That's the type of thing that also can come back to haunt people as we head to an election year.
Yeah, I suppose, although I tend to think that a few angry mayors will not carry as much political ad force as the, you know, the overall tax increase and that message that's going to be driven home time and time again. You know, it just goes to show this is budget making is complicated. It's particularly complicated when you put it off for 2 years and you have to use scotch tape and bent coat hangers to keep the thing from falling apart and win bipartisan support in the end. I'm sure this won't be the last little thing that people noticed that maybe they weren't didn't rise to public consciousness during the initial round of votes on this.
Well, a lot of people may not be happy with Governor Bruce Rauner these days for various things, but I didn't expect one of those things to be not coming out looking at floodwaters, and sure enough, he is getting some heat for that. Chris, you live up north these days, at least for a little while longer.
Our basement's not flooded.
Your basement's dry, but a lot of people's are not, I'm sure, and there's concerns, especially in like the Lake County area, and he's gotten some heat over this.
Yeah, Lake County's gotten historic floods. Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois have gotten some historic floods in the last few days, and this happened at the same time that the governor was sort of rearranging the staff early in the week, and they missed an opportunity that every governor it's like the first thing you learn when you become a governor. If there's a disaster, you immediately show up in a helicopter in an open shirt and fly around and look concerned. And basically, the way that the governor can express the sympathy of the people of the state.
And he has done that in other. Cases too.
Yes, they just dropped a ball on this one, and now he's up there, or he went up there on Friday, you know, he's going to be given the press conference. Whether this is a short term thing and it just blows over, so to speak, you know, we'll see. But it is an example that, you know, maybe it was just the transition issues, and again, the new staffers weren't paying attention because they're trying to get their desks arranged. But the you know, it's not, you know, they're also, again, not really sort of experienced in government. I mean, that's not who they are. They're not, you know, they don't know how to govern. That's not, you know, they're there for their ideological purity. And so that makes me wonder if there's going to be more of these kind of missteps.
And Greg, are you getting, or I'm sure you're watching some TV and other things like that up there, seeing people being upset about that? I mean, is he getting a lot of heat for, you know, on television at least, for not going out and being out in the midst?
He's getting a little bit, but picture's worth a thousand words, and the pictures tonight and this evening on TV up here are going to be very worried and concerned-looking governor holding hands and tutting about all that terrible water and promising to send all kinds of state aid, thanks to the fact that we now have a budget he can afford it. So my suspicion is there will be some latent grumbling, but if he hadn't shown up today or tomorrow or certainly this weekend, I think there would have been big trouble. My suspicion is this will probably float away, sorry for the pun, in the next few days.
Just about a minute or so here, but I did want to save a moment to talk about one of the venerable papers, and Charlie not being here this week. He's on vacation, but Charlie not being here, he could certainly talk about this. The Chicago Sun-Times getting some new ownership. Who wants to weigh in on that?
Well, I'll just state the for fans of politics, I'll just state the obvious. Traditionally, Chicago's had two papers of different ideological brands. The Tribune has been the conservative paper on the editorial page, certainly. The Sun-Times has been the liberal paper. Well, the Tribune was in the process of buying the Sun-Times, and although they said they were going to keep the independent newsrooms or whatever, a lot of folks figured that it would start that in the end it would probably follow the dictates of management and take a much more conservative view. Well, guess what? The paper got bought by a bunch of liberal Democrats in the last couple of days. Chicago Federation of Labor, a former alderman named Edwin Eisendrath from Lincoln Park, Bill Bratt, the former chairman of the Illinois Finance Authority and a big Democratic fundraiser. Well, they now own it, although they're all swearing to a man and woman that they're not going to interfere in editorial policy, it looks like the status quo has returned. We're going to have a Republican-leaning paper in this town and a Democratic-leaning paper.
It's time for our notes from the field, and Greg, we'll stay with you.
It's mid-July. It's time to head to the beach and the parks, right? Well, this week, the Illinois and Chicago Departments of Transportation rolled out a big new plan to rebuild the north end of Lakeshore Drive, and featuring it is essentially they want to move the drive farther out into the lake with Lakeville and then backfill with 100 acres, maybe more, of new park space and relocated beach and whatever. It would certainly give, if you look at what they did in Millennium Park, this would essentially recreate Millennium Park on the other side of the Central Business District, certainly give downtown a different look.
Brian Mackey?
Yeah, well, the state controller this week was out touting the fact that she's not going to be sending a lot of money to higher education because of this budget that passed. Higher education, one of the sectors that was hit hardest. Hundreds of people laid off from particularly the directional universities like Eastern and Western. But meanwhile, even though that money is coming through, there are still cuts that are taking place. We saw the Southern Illinois University Board of Trustees meeting this week announcing $26 million in cuts, closing several programs. So this is, even though the budget crisis may be over for now, the damage is still going to be ongoing for quite a while.
That will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast today included Chris Mooney, Brian Mackey, and Greg Hines. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and find us on NPR One. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.